Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Golf course complaints prompted meeting. A number of things have led to less than ideal conditions at Ratliff Ranch Golf Links, but Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero said a plan has been put into place to address them. The city has been receiving complaints about the grounds, which prompted Mayor Javier Hoven to hold a meeting with the Citizens Golf Advisory Committee last week, Marrero said. Odessa City Council members Mary Willis and Deidre White were two of five City Council members who attended the meeting, which wasn't posted in advance, violating Texas's Open Meeting Act. Both women insisted none of the five knew the others were going to be there. They sat separately and none of them participated in the discussion. "I swear it was innocent," White said. "It was a coincidence." Willis heard about the meeting from constituents. She said, "I'm concerned about the conditions, but in that meeting was laid out a plan for improvement and for turning it around," Willis said. "I think if those things are carried out, we will see some improvement in our golf course. Of course, we want to strive for excellence in all that we do. We want it to be a place of excellence as well. It has been. I'm not sure still what happened, but there was a hiccup that it wasn't, and we'll get it back." Marrero said the city is in the process of reassessing the entire course with help from consultants and taking other steps to improve matters. "A number of things have contributed to the poor condition of the grounds," Marrero said. "Certainly the weather doesn't help. We've experienced higher than normal, earlier than normal temperatures in West Texas, so that has a lot to do with it," Marrero said. "I think the lack of rain also has a significant thing to do with it. We've always been fortunate to have spring rains, and that has always kind of helped kick off the growing season at the golf course, just like your home or my home. And so the absence of those things, I think, are major contributors. And then certainly we could always do better on maintenance, and we intend to do better. In addition, the golf course has seen some turnover in staff, so people familiar with the grounds' complicated watering system weren't around," Marrero said. "It's all digitized, and those things are set up in such a way that it does a certain amount of irrigation based on the needs within the specific area. When you add things like heat, when you add things like lack of rain, and let's face it, out in West Texas, when you add wind, that often takes those things off course. So a lot of what we saw was water was not getting in areas," Marrero said. The city has recently promoted a staff member to interim golf pro, and they will be responsible for overseeing the operations of the course. The city is also in the process of hiring a superintendent who will be in charge of the grounds. Until the superintendent is hired, Marrero said, staff will continue to work with a third-party consultant who is very familiar, specifically with our course, and has been very successful in growing grass. Basically, things are looking up, Marrero said. We've put together a pretty good plan that includes reassessing all of the entire course to making sure that we've got the resources necessary so we can bring it back to a level that we expect. Not only that, but what the citizens expect, Marrero said. That includes things like ensuring that the irrigation systems are working properly, making sure that they're adjusted correctly. It's not a matter of it not working. I think it's an adjustment issue. Restoring the greens and trying to bring those back to playing condition. We would have, within the next couple of months, the course back to where we think it needs to be.
And now here are additional articles we didn't have time to read during Monday's broadcast. First, from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Saturday, June 18th edition. Obituaries. Dennis Crowley. On Wednesday, May 25th, 2022, Dennis Elsler Crowley, loving, devoted husband and father of three children, passed away at the age of 93 in Round Rock, Texas. Dennis was born July 29th, 1928 in Laredo, Texas, to Francis and Margaret Stotts Crowley. Dennis was preceded in death by both of his parents, son Sean in 2019, and granddaughter Christine, 1997. He is survived by his wife Marilyn, son Kevin and wife Deanne, daughter Carrie and husband Zahir Nuromahmed, daughter-in-law Nancy Crowley, and five grandchildren. Graveside service will be held Saturday, June 25th at 11:30 a.m. at Rest Haven Cemetery, Lubbock, Texas. A reception will be held prior to the service from 9:30 to 11 a.m. at Rest Haven. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to any veteran organization of your choice. Marilyn Ruth Douglas. Marilyn Ruth Douglas, 94, of Midland, passed away peacefully at her home on Tuesday, June 7th. A private family memorial service will be held at a later date. Marilyn was born on November 12, 1927, in Cleveland, Ohio, to Mary and Clifford Dre. She married Max Earl Douglas on March 20, 1947, in Napoleon, Ohio. Survivors include her sons, Michael Douglas and wife Deborah of Missouri City, Texas, and Gary Douglas and wife Paula of Midland. Daughter Lynn Pace and husband Mark of Midland. Daughter-in-law Mary Douglas of Midland. Sister Janet Korn of Cleveland, Ohio. Plus grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Marilyn is preceded in death by her parents, her husband Max Douglas, her son Steve Douglas, and her brother Clifford Alfred Dre Jr. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Sharon M. Williams. Sharon M. Williams of Midland, 73, known by all as Cher, passed away Thursday, June 9th. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, June 25th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. She was born on February 26, 1949, in Silverton, Texas, to Mary Blanche O'Neill and William Bill Hubert Martin. Cher is survived by her daughter, Lori McWilliams Gerbach, and husband Richard O. Gerbach of Belton, daughter Lindsay Allison Williams of Midland, grandchildren Owen and Devin Gerbach of Belton, and Jihan and Kahil Gerbach of Pembroke Pines, Florida. Cher is survived by her siblings Ramona Martin and husband Gary Martin of Silverton, Mike Martin of Tulia, Jennifer Marley of Bowie, and numerous nieces and nephews. Cher is preceded in death by her husband of 35 years, J. David Williams, Jr., her parents, Mary and Bill Martin, her siblings, Jimmy Dale Martin, Jerry Wayne Martin, William Earl Martin, Carolyn Carlisle, and Mary Ann Scarborough Moody. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Lone Star Animal Sanctuary. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Death notices from Saturday, June 18th. James Jim Story. James Jim Story, 89, of Midland, passed away June 16th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 21st, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, June 22nd, at First Baptist Church Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Odessa American Front Page, Monday, June 20th. Tech Nursing School tops in rankings. The Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center School of Nursing is in some elite company. They were recently ranked number one in the Nursing School Rankings Almanac among 80 others in Texas. It was also number one among 90 nursing schools in the Southwest, topping the UT Health Science Center in Houston. Texas Tech ranked number 10 among all public U.S. nursing schools and among the top 100 schools in the nation. Texas Tech was ranked number 18, according to the Almanac. That includes institutions like Duke and Johns Hopkins. Sharon Cannon, regional dean and professor at the School of Nursing, said when students are looking for schools of nursing, they typically look for rankings to be able to choose. "We have high respect for this particular ranking for nursing schools," Cannon said. "A lot of the others that do rankings many times, the schools do self-reporting. What's unique about this reporting is that they go from public data, not just something that a school puts forward in an individual survey kind of thing. They do a lot of investigation before they do their rankings. It's used on nearly 3,000 nursing schools and campuses nationwide. They talk about all the different criteria that they use, the prestige of the institution, student success, breadth, and depth. Success on the licensure exam," she added. In the past, Cannon said, Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center School of Nursing has been behind UT Health Science Center in Houston, which is number two this year. "Many prospective nursing students really depend on these rankings. It certainly is good for the general public to know and understand that we have a quality school and that we're recognized for a national ranking." She added that they have excellent programs and faculty. For instance, one of the things they look for is nursing centers of excellence by the National League for Nursing, Cannon said. Texas Tech has been a nursing center of excellence for a number of years. "Our students do very well on the licensure exam. I will tell you, overall, the School of Nursing has been somewhere between 90 to 96%. The state requires 85%, and we're well above that. Things like that are extremely important because they talk about how well we do," Cannon said. "We also have nurse practitioners that have to be certified. We have a high ranking among those as well. Those are things that are important when it comes to evaluating a school," she added. "The cost is competitive, and Tech has good student outcomes," she said. "We want our students to be successful, so we put as much in place as we can to make that possible," Cannon noted. "We are thrilled with this ranking, and we will strive to do even better, especially in national rankings. But when you can say we're number 18, we have to be doing something right," she added. Tech has nursing campuses in Amarillo, Mansfield, Dallas, the Permian Basin, and Abilene. "These programs are good regardless of where the School of Nursing is located, so that says a lot as well. Sometimes we take for granted that institutions that we have and don't realize what we have in our own backyard. For that, we're extremely proud of the fact that we've achieved that. We're not done yet. We're hoping to improve on that score even more," Cannon said. OPD investigating homicide. At approximately 6:20 p.m. June 18th, Odessa Police and Fire Rescue responded to a gunshot victim at 2502 North Tom Green. Upon arrival, officers located a male inside the residence with multiple gunshot wounds, a news release detailed. He was transported to Medical Center Hospital, where he subsequently succumbed to injuries sustained. The next of kin has been notified, and he was identified as 58-year-old Joe Abril, the release said. The suspect, Stephanie Toole, 37, of Odessa, has been charged in connection with the shooting. Toole was arrested for murder and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center, the release said. The investigation continues. Longtime staffer wins Para Professional of the Year. Wanting to be there as her daughter was growing up led Maria Melendez to seek work at Ector County ISD. 22 years later, Melendez works in the Benefits and Risk Management Department and was recently named Para Professional of the Year. "I was so surprised," she said, "of getting the recognition. That was the furthest thing from my mind. It was truly an honor because I never expected it. And the way they did it, my director said, 'Come with me. Let's celebrate whoever's getting it because it's somebody from the administration.' They were all lined up in front and they were all taking pictures. Everybody was back there and I'm always kind of in the back. When I walked out, everybody turned around. So I was like, 'Oh my goodness.' I didn't realize it was for me until everybody turned around and said, 'Congratulations.' It was a neat surprise. Totally unexpected," Melendez said. She started off working at AIM High School as an aide and was promoted to secretary. After AIM closed, she was interviewed by the Benefits and Risk Management. She's been there since 2011. At the campus, she wore a lot of different hats. At Benefits and Risk Management, she still interacts with a lot of people, but it's district employees as opposed to students. This is Melendez's busy time of year. It's people who are leaving the district, whether they're retiring or going elsewhere. And then, of course, we have new staff coming in. Of course, HR processes them, but we do their benefits, so they still have to come through our office, Melendez said. She added that she enjoys every aspect of her job, which involves everything from answering the phones and greeting people to assisting employees with life changes that impact their benefits. Melendez also keeps the benefits and risk management webpage updated. I love interacting with people. I love what I do, like working with reports and data and that type of thing. But I love getting to know the people that work for ECISD just as I do, Melendez said. Director of Benefits and Risk Management, Yolanda Gordon, said Melendez is an asset to ECISD. She is always professional, has an impeccable work ethic, and has wonderful customer service skills. I'm very proud of Maria, and this award was well-deserved, Gordon said. A native of Fort Stockton, Melendez and her husband, Joe, have one daughter and six grandchildren who all attend ECISD schools. I'm very honored and grateful for this award and that it was totally unexpected. I appreciate whoever nominated me. I'm overwhelmed with gratitude for them even thinking that I was worth Employee of the Year. So I'm truly honored, Melendez said. The Dynamics of Conflict by Brian Wingfield, LMFT, of Samaritan Counseling Center. Whether the rising usage of social media is to blame or perhaps some other additional factors, it does seem at times that conflict is often all around us. The conflict can sometimes be centered around political views, religious, faith, spiritual views, or racial and gender identity, just to name a few of the most recent things some people have been arguing with each other about. The bottom line is that people sometimes have difficulties getting along and avoiding conflict. One of the techniques that can be utilized when it seems like a resolution and compromise seems unattainable is emphatic listening. The goal of emphatic listening is to seek understanding, although not necessarily a solution, during a conflict. The first step in this process is to intentionally listen to the other person with your undivided attention, or whole self. The idea is not be distracted by how you are going to respond or disagreeing in your mind with what they are saying in real time. Second, take time to fully understand and process what the other is saying. Ask open-ended questions for clarification to gain more understanding. Make sure the questions really are ones that will help you gain more knowledge and not covert attempts to disagree with what the other person has just said or to make a passive-aggressive attempt to poke holes in the other person's line of thinking. The goal at this stage is to be able to accurately paraphrase the other person's thoughts. Thirdly, ask questions to seek understanding why they believe in the issue in the way in which they do. The point is not to argue, debate the other person's firmly held views. The goal is to fully understand the other person's reasoning for believing the way they do. Following this three-step process will enable you to accurately paraphrase what the other person has said and to be able to fully describe why they believe in that concept. It is important to acknowledge that we can seek to understand someone and their views without compromising what we believe. Furthermore, in order to have effective communication, it is important we must make a sincere attempt at understanding another person, especially someone that we happen to disagree with. If you realize you are having difficulties with being able to effectively communicate with others, and this is causing distress in your life, whether that be in your personal relationships, on the job, or people at large, please contact the Samaritan Counseling Center for help at 432-563-4144. Also from the Monday, June 10th, Odessa American issue. Why am I receiving a Medicare Part D late enrollment penalty? By Tony King. Hello, Tony. I have received a notice from CMS, Medicare, saying they do not have a record of me having prescription drug coverage that met Medicare's minimum standards from August 1st, 2019, when I applied for Medicare Part A after turning 65 to June 1st, 2022, and I may receive a Part D late enrollment penalty. I had enrolled myself in Medicare Part B after losing my job due to a recent layoff. I thought applying for Part B with the Medicare form signed from my HR department notified Medicare that I had been covered with my employer benefits, including prescription drug coverage. What do I do? I do not understand any of this. Jesse from Alvin, Texas. Jesse, Americans retiring or laid off after 65 with employers' group benefits who are applying for Medicare Parts A and B must prove that they have creditable prescription drug coverage when applying for their new Medicare Part D. Taking the Request for Enrollment Information form to Social Security to avoid the famous Medicare Part B penalty informs Medicare that you have had employer benefits since turning 65. The form does not inform Medicare that you had creditable prescription drug coverage. The letter you received from the new Medicare Part D prescription drug plan, which you enrolled in, explains what you should do to inform Medicare what prescription drug coverage you had by either calling an 800 number or has a form describing what kind of coverage you had, which you can mail back to the Medicare Part D plan you enrolled in. Because America is overloaded with marketing material when enrolling in Medicare, many fail to open the important mail and understand the importance of notifying the specific Medicare Part D plan regarding what type of prescription drug coverage was received when leaving employer benefits. The Medicare and You Handbook states, creditable prescription drug coverage could include drug coverage from a current or former employer or union, TRICARE, Indian Health Service, the VA, or health insurance coverage. Your plan must tell you each year if your drug coverage is a creditable coverage. This information may be sent to you in a letter or included in a newsletter from the plan. Keep this information because you may need it if you join a Medicare drug plan late. The handbook does not advise what creditable coverage is. Creditable drug coverage should meet or exceed what Medicare's Part D plan minimums are for that current year. Puzzling, I know. Medicare does not regard discount prescription drug cards or low-cost generics programs as creditable coverage. These types of plans cannot keep you from the late enrollment penalty. Your late enrollment period, LEP, does not begin from the day you lose or leave your company health plan, but from the month your Medicare Part A begins, not Part B. This LEP, late enrollment period, penalty, can be because 1. You waited past 63 days without creditable prescription drug coverage when you are leaving company benefits and you are older than 65 years old and 90 days. Do not wait past 63 days to get Part D when leaving company health plans. Need your Medicare LEP letter examined by a Tony Says Medicare consultant? Call 832-519-8664 or email info@TonySays.com. 2. Your company prescription drug benefits, not health benefits, are not creditable as Medicare declares. 3. You simply never enrolled in Medicare Part D when you were first eligible and want to enroll. Last week, a Tony Says Medicare client called asking a Tony Says Medicare consultant about the letter they had received in May that was never opened and was to their 63-day look-back period. Sign up for the Tony Says Medicare newsletter explaining Medicare rules at www.TonySays.com to better understand the Medicare LEP penalty.
Mom worries about history of breast cancer. Dear Dr. Roach, I am concerned that my 33-year-old daughter will have breast cancer. I have no history in my family of breast cancer, but my husband's grandmother mother and sister all have had breast cancer with double mastectomies. I've heard that the DNA follows the mother's side and not the father's. Is this true or an old wives' tale? Should she have a BRCA test? DC. Answer, most cases of breast cancer are sporadic, meaning there is no particular identifiable family risk to develop breast cancer. However, there are identified genetic risks, especially including the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genetic variants, which are worth testing for in certain situations. The guidelines for testing a person for BRCA1 and 2 are complicated, and I don't have enough space to even summarize them here. However, the family history you've given is probably not enough to recommend gene testing, unless there are other factors such as Ashkenazi Jew background, the types of breast cancer such as triple negative breast cancer, and the ages at which the family members are diagnosed are also important. The genes for BRCA1 and 2 are autosomal, not X-linked, meaning that it doesn't much matter whether they come from the maternal or paternal side. Slight differences due to something called epigenetic changes can mean people who inherit BRCA2 from their father can tend to have their breast and ovarian cancers diagnosed at a younger age than if it comes from their mother. Ideally, the person who had the cancer, breast, ovarian, pancreas, and prostate cancers all are affected by BRCA genes, should be tested not only for BRCA1 and 2, but other newly identified genetic susceptibility genes. The best advice on whether testing for your daughter is appropriate would come from a genetic counselor.
This is the Dear Abby column. Wife feels it's the end of the line with drunk hubby. Dear Abby, I got pregnant at 15 and had my oldest daughter at 16. I met my husband at 18 and went on to have four more daughters. I have been with him for more than 30 years. I just turned 49. My girls are living their own lives now. The thing is, now that I'm alone with my husband, I've come to discover that we have nothing in common. I want to leave him, but I have no money, no car, and no job. I have become someone I never thought I would become, alone with no life. My husband ignores me and drinks a lot. When we visit family, it's a free-for-all drunk fest for him. I just don't have the energy at my age to deal with a drunk. I dealt all my life with an alcoholic father, and I don't want to do it anymore. How do I begin to rebuild my life and start over? I really need to do this for myself. Signed, At a Crossroads in Ohio. Dear At a Crossroads, I agree that rebuilding your life is something you need to do for yourself. The surest way to accomplish it would be to get a job. This may eventually equip you to survive on your own. If you need transportation, ask your daughters for help, or take public transportation. If you prefer not to attend family gatherings, have your husband go alone. Your father's alcoholism may have contributed to the fact that you married someone with an alcohol problem, thinking it was normal. If that's the case, consider finding a nearby chapter of Al-Anon, alanon.org/info, or Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families, adultchildren.org, and attend some of the meetings. They are sometimes held online, so you could do it on a computer if necessary. I wish you luck on your journey. Dear Abby, I am a widow with three serious illnesses, one of which is potentially deadly. I hesitate to confide in some of my friends because the majority of them go into a litany of their illnesses. For the most part, their ailments are common and require just a small change in diet or perhaps losing some weight. What makes it uncomfortable for me is they act like they are in a life-threatening situation, which they aren't. I find it increasingly difficult to empathize with their common colds, achy joints, etc. How can I explain to these folks how much they upset me? For the most part, they are good people, just very self-centered. Signed, Challenged in New Hampshire. Dear Challenged, it may be unrealistic to expect friends who don't know about your serious medical conditions to empathize with you or stop complaining about their aches and pains. Rather than say their complaints are annoying, tell them the truth about what's going on with you. After that, try to remember that regardless of how minor, every person's health challenges are important to them, even if on the grand scale of things, they don't seem that way to you. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.